How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest from the world of sports, DFS, and gambling. With over 5 years of hot takes and millions of downloads later, I guess he's been doing something right. Now, sit back and listen to one of the sharpest minds in the game. Here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Hello and welcome to the show, folks. We have a busy day ahead in sports, and we haven't even gotten to the NFL tomorrow. We actually have a massive UFC pay-per-view here in New York down at MSG, and I, for one, am excited for the card, but we got to talk about something else that happened last night, and I'll be honest, I have to admit, folks, I dropped the ball. I dropped the ball as a content creator because the amount of questions and comments I got about the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight last night, I couldn't believe people were that interested in this fight, let alone asking my opinion on who's going to win. I'll be perfectly honest with you guys. I talked about this months ago when this was originally announced. And I said it was a carnival show because there was no way this could even remotely be a real fight. There's no way. And the reason why I went back into this is just the fact that Mike Tyson is 58 years old. I need to be clear about this. 58. I know it's Mike Tyson, but Father Time is undefeated for a reason. So when I have to, like, just answer the question, I had to ask the folks if they were trolling me. Because people were asking me if they should bet on Mike Tyson. Now, there were two caveats to this. And the irony is that New York was, you know, being a New Yorker, New York was one of the few places you couldn't bet this fight. For reasons that no one really could explain. But I actually think I have an explanation, even though it sounds like the dumbest thing imaginable why no one could actually bet on what was, quite honestly, one of the most casual betting experiences of the year, if not the last couple of years since Conor McGregor fought Floyd Mayweather. I mean, the Mayweather-McGregor fight, like, that was the last carnival show kind of thing where folks were genuinely curious. But even then, some of the inquiries I was getting on this fight were trumping that. Like, from folks that were asking about this fight just because it was Mike Tyson. I honestly could not believe that folks were that invested in this fight. Maybe it was the Netflix factor of it not being a pay-per-view and that you could see it on Netflix. I'll get into that as well. I'll get into the Netflix aspect as well because there were quite a few comments about Netflix as a whole. And I had to chuckle because it wasn't a surprise that Netflix had a problem broadcasting this live. So we'll get into that a little bit as well. But yeah, I mean, quite honestly, I really have to apologize because, to truth be told, for the folks who bet on Mike Tyson to win that fight, if you're a regular listener of this show, I have to say that I apologize that you bet on Mike Tyson, but I will also say that it's not that I'm mad you bet on Mike Tyson. I'm disappointed that you did not see the glaring elephant in the room that Mike Tyson being 58 was not something that should be allowed in a boxing ring. Even when you throw in the example of George Foreman winning the heavyweight title well past his prime. George Foreman was 43 when he won the heavyweight title coming out of retirement. 15 years from 43 to 58 it's not even like, you can't even quantify that in terms of boxing and an athletic age. It's not even close. Like, literally, Mike Tyson, in terms of athletic prowess, it's like in what his sport requires, Mike Tyson trying to box at 58 is the equivalent of essentially a 70-year-old trying to do a 40-yard dash against college students. Because I don't consider Jake Paul to be a professional boxer. He cherry picks his opponents. If you look at his literal background in terms of what he's doing from a skill set standpoint, and you compare it to actual pros, he's not a real professional boxer. There's a reason why he almost lost to Fury, is that, you know, essentially, Fury, like, he lost to Tyson Fury's cousin. I mean, the reason why that match was so close is just the fact that Jake Paul is not a very skilled boxer, to be perfectly honest. Tommy Fury, was the more technical boxer. It's just that Tommy Fury didn't have any punching power. You know, if Tommy Fury could actually punch like Tyson Fury, Jake Paul would have gotten his clock cleaned by the fourth round, at least. Like, easily. Because his footwork isn't great. His punching isn't that great. The reason why he's able to knock folks out is, like, he throws wild haymakers that if you're not a skilled boxer and you get caught with your hands down, yeah, it's going to drop you. But, you know, realistically, that's the issue with Jake Paul fights. Like, Jake Paul doesn't fight real fighters. He knows he can't beat real fighters. That's why he takes all of these, you know, ridiculous aspects of try to drum up business with fights that are not real fights. I mean, I don't know how else we want to phrase this, but, you know, the fact is, like, Mike Tyson even had a medical condition that prevented him from fighting Paul back in June. The whole reason why Mike didn't fight Jake Paul earlier is because he had a, you know, and again, they were saying all the situation was clear, but, like, it was serious enough. They had to remove Mike from the fight and retest him again that he was going to be healthy. Like, the fact that we even got this fight was kind of ridiculous. It was nonsense. But literally, Jake Paul, his last fight was against Mike Perry, a former UFC fighter and bare knuckle fighter. But, like, Mike Perry's not a boxer. He can't box. Like, he goes after, like, you had Jake Paul versus Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz technically is more of a UFC fighter. Yes, he does some boxing, but again, you saw that all of it was just the fact that, you know, Jake Paul essentially just maneuvers, and because, you know, I don't know if you look at Jake Paul's body type, but there's a very reasonable chance, not saying that I have official something, but it's like there's a larger than probable chance that there may be a little extra secret sauce going on in there, if you know what I'm saying. It's like Jake Paul does not submit to the standard drug testing of other professional boxers, if you will. So there's a whole dynamic where he's fighting guys that are well outside his weight class, and basically, they have no punching power to even threaten him. That's the truth of the matter, is that, you know, whatever you want to say is that, it's not exactly the most interesting debacle. The crazy part about all of this is just the fact that, you know, when we go back through this, is that Jake Paul lost the Tommy Fury fight, but Tommy Fury had no power. It's like, it's just one of those things where, you know, all these fights that he keeps picking, Tommy Fury was the most realistic fighter and he lost the fight. It is what it is. I mean, the Nate Diaz fight, the Tyron Woodley fight, I mean, these were bad boxing matches. But, like, folks were convinced somehow that Mike Tyson, nearly 60 years old, was going to knock out Jake Paul. The problem with all of this, folks, is that it requires Mike Tyson to have the legs he used to have 20 years ago. There's a reason why you don't box past a certain age, because you can't move. The whole issue last night was Mike Tyson literally could not move. Even if he landed a good punch, he can't follow it up because he can't close the distance fast enough. I mean, this was the easiest boxing bet of all time. Jake Paul somehow was only minus 200, which I found to be the most suspect thing ever because, again, I couldn't believe the amount of public money coming in on Mike Tyson that I had. You know, maybe this was me giving folks too much credit. That's why I say I'm not mad. I'm disappointed if you bet money on Mike Tyson. Logistically, there's no possible way for Mike Tyson to win that fight other than, and you don't want to say a lucky punch, but literally he would need to actually clip Jake Paul on the chin clean or behind the ear to where he slowed him down enough and then he could just swarm him with punches and then the ref stops, comes in to stop the fight. That was literally the only scenario where Mike Tyson would win that fight. There's no way he was going to be able to jab him. And again, this is the reason, also the reason why I don't think you were allowed to bet it in New York. They adjusted the rules so that it was only 2-minute rounds instead of 3-minute rounds. So while I think they might have allowed it for betting purposes in New York, it even at 8 rounds, if they kept it at 3 minutes per round in 8 rounds, I think they would have allowed it. But when they shortened it to 2 minutes in 8 rounds, I think that's what it kind of disqualified it from being considered a true professional bout. And that's why it wasn't the betting lines weren't available for residents in New York. But, yeah, the betting line with this only being minus 200 for Jake Paul, like, this was such a generational wealth scenario to just bet heavy on Jake Paul. I could not believe there are people betting six figures or more on Mike Tyson in 2024. Like, what are we doing? I'm sorry. There's just no way to justify how to. It's like, I don't care how much you made. Dislike the Paul brothers. There's no logistical avenue outside of a lucky punch where Jake Paul was going to lose that fight to Mike Tyson. Or maybe he rolls an ankle somehow in the middle of the ring and he can't continue to fight. That's literally it. Like, just random injury. I'm sorry. There's a reason why we call it movies. Because the Rocky Balboa films, where, like, yeah, they had Rocky come out of retirement. It's like, it's a movie for a reason. In real life, Rocky would get smoked in that return fight, when they did that, when they did the Rocky Balboa film with Antonio Tarver playing the heavyweight champ of the world at that time. It's like, come on. There's no way that works. But folks were actually betting on Mike Tyson. I'm sorry, guys. I'm really sorry if you lost money betting on Mike Tyson. But realistically, you had no business doing that. So for the listeners of the show who bet on Mike Tyson, I apologize that I did not record an episode of just talking out of a terrible, terrible investment of your money. Because there was no way on earth I could have ever recommended someone betting money on Mike Tyson in 2024 to win that boxing match. Not a chance. So I apologize on that front. Now, I will say, though, from an overall presentation standpoint, I thought it was a relatively decent boxing pay-per-view. Yes, there was a ton of filler, but from the nonsensical Tyson pregame interview where he wasn't wearing real pants. And everyone who was watching that knows exactly what I was talking about. But it's just like, it was honestly Mike Tyson from the Hangover movies showed up in the interview session for the boxing pay-per-view last night. So that's where I kind of looked at it. And then for everyone complaining about the streaming issues on Netflix, I will say this, that as someone who follows social media, I distinctly remember Netflix being incapable of showing live events. This happened during the Tom Brady roast. I know this happened during the Tom Brady roast. And I also remember this happening even before then from the lady listeners listening to the show. Y'all know exactly what I'm talking about because you were probably watching it. The Love is Blind reunion special. The amount of tweets that generated. I learned what Love is Blind is because of the debacle over the Netflix stream crashing and all of you flooding Twitter and the timeline I had at the time. Like, it just took over everything. Even if you were just trying to follow sports like I do, the Love is Blind reunion special was like the number one talked about event for 2 days, with everyone complaining either about the Netflix stream crashing or somehow that the Nick and Vanessa Lachey were evil. And I have no idea what happened, but those are two things I remember distinctly about that reunion, is that it trended on Twitter for multiple days. Everyone complained about Twitter being terrible for live broadcasting. And so now that Netflix is getting into live broadcasts and like having pro wrestling on with Monday Night Raw coming next year, I can't wait to see what happened, because everyone complained last night did not even remotely shock me. But I know it's going to be an issue moving forward with Netflix, that they got to figure out this live sports thing. They haven't done it, but they're going to find out real quick, because there are so many people complaining about wanting to cancel their Netflix subscriptions last night that I had to laugh, because I'm just saying, it's like, you didn't even pay for the pay-per-view. This is part of your Netflix subscription. This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing you're watching live. Just watch your stream, binge watch, whatever you're going to do anyway, and move on. Why would you cancel your subscription over something that's a once-in-a-lifetime event, even though it turned into a complete debacle? It's still a once-in-a-lifetime event, but you still watched it. But for the boxing aficionados, you saw a great fight between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano that, once again, Serrano got robbed, because that was the rematch to the first match where Serrano beat Katie Taylor and got hosed on the judges' scorecard. This time, she got hosed even harder on top of getting headbutted multiple times. But like I said, there's a reason why boxing is boxing, because no matter how rigged certain decisions may be, how many shenanigans we come across, as boxing fans, we gravitate towards the spectacle of it all because we love the sport in general. No matter how much of a sideshow guys like Jake Paul turn the sport into, we still will watch no matter what. So that is my takeaway from Jake Paul, Mike Tyson last night. Nothing I haven't seen before out of boxing, but you had to at least watch it. But I cannot believe that folks actually thought Mike Tyson was going to win this fight. Like, even after the first two rounds, people thought there was still a chance Mike could win the fight. It was bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. But, you know, sometimes y'all have to figure out the hard way. But without much further ado, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to get into the UFC card, because I want to kind of go over my favorite plays in terms of the card and probably what I'm going to do for a DFS standpoint. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after the sponsors.
Don't go anywhere. The Fantasy Throwdown Podcast will be right back after our sponsors pay the bills.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you got your popcorn ready.
All right, we're back. UFC 309 from MSG. So the greatest arena on earth is hosting UFC tonight, and it is the return of Jon Jones to the octagon after a lengthy absence because, I mean, as the heavyweight champion, Jon Jones has had exactly zero title defenses. I mean, realistically, when Jones won the heavyweight title from Ciryl Gane, it was March of 2023. Think about that. March of 2023. We are a full 18 months removed since the last time we saw Jon Jones. And remember, that was Jon Jones' first fight since 2020. So let's just rewind here. Jon Jones has fought exactly once in the last 4 years. I mean, it is what it is. But Stipe Miocic hasn't fought in 3 years either. We, in fact, covered Stipe's last match against Francis Ngannou on this podcast 3 years ago. I covered this pay-per-view on the podcast and watched the fight live, how it played out. I thought Stipe was not getting enough respect, and Ngannou starched him. It, like, starched him to the extent that it was a very well-deserved retirement for Stipe, because Stipe looked old, and the shot that he ate from Ngannou, realistically, you cannot eat too many of those and be a fully functioning human long-term over time. It's just not a healthy way of living. So technically, it's a good idea that Stipe took the time away. But at this point, being 3 years removed, Stipe is 42 years old and about 5 years removed from his prime. Now, when he was having his fights with Cormier, Stipe was already past his prime. And part of the reason why Cormier was able to beat Stipe was just the fact that you could clinch Stipe, and when he was exiting out of the clinch, he was very hittable. And that's where Daniel Cormier got him. And again, got into a clinch situation and got started. Like, Stipe is just not mobile enough at this stage of his career to shrug folks off. Now, as much as Jones could be rusty in the octagon, Jones is far and away the better fighter, more well-rounded wrestler. The minus 650 odds for Jones is well-deserved. There's not really a scenario other than Jones just gets caught walking into a punch where Stipe wins this fight. This would have been a great fight 7 years ago. We're getting it in 2024. It is what it is. So to me, this is more about Stipe collecting a paycheck than Jones having this tremendous challenge. Now, the question is, does Jon Jones immediately retire after winning this fight? Because in my opinion, the play here is more for Jones to finish inside the distance than this to go a full five rounds. I don't see the scenario where Stipe is able to hang around long enough against Jon Jones to last a full 25 minutes. I can't see the scenario. It doesn't make a ton of sense. I think this is just pretty much a clear cut. John Jones finishes inside the distance, and the question it just becomes whether or not, we get this by submission or a TKO. But to me, there's really not much. There's not much to kind of go off of, in my opinion, because this is a pretty straightforward fight. The only question, like I said, in my mind is, if it's a straight finish, I just don't see where Stipe can get a win over Jones. Like, that's the problem. So I look at it from that standpoint. Now, Stipe's, it's just a puncher's chance. Like, there's no way Stipe is winning this fight outside of getting a knockout. He's not going to submit Jones. It's just not happening. So if you're going to bet Stipe, and he's plus 475, he's not going to win a decision. The only way you're going to bet Stipe is by KO or TKO, or maybe somehow Jones gets himself disqualified, but I mean, there's really nothing in the cards for that. It's like, we got to be realistic here. The only play here is Stipe plus 700 to win by KO or TKO, if you're going to bet the Stipe side. But the reality situation is, Jones to win by submission or TKO is minus 250. Because part of what people think this is going to is that it's going to be Stipe somehow surviving long enough. And again, I'm not seeing how this works. People are actually believing Stipe is going to hang around this fight long enough to get to a decision. That's why I'm just not seeing it. I don't see the scenario where you're going to have to get a little bit different, because like, there's too many other ways this goes sideways across the board. I don't know how else to break this fight down. There's no path to victory I see for Stipe that doesn't involve Jones screwing up somehow. That's the reality of the situation for this main event. Now, for the co-main event, I think it's a far more entertaining scenario, because you have Charles DuBronx Oliveira versus Michael Chandler. And, Chandler, these guys already fought before for the belt. Oliveira has lost the belt to Makhachev twice. I look at this from the standpoint of, Chandler wanted the money fight against McGregor, couldn't get it, is now trying to take this fight against Oliveira so he can get a shot at Makhachev. The problem is that, Chandler held out for 2 years trying to get this fight with Conor McGregor. The last fight he had against Dustin Poirier, he got submitted in the third round. He gassed out and got submitted by Dustin Poirier. He's 1-3 in his last four fights. And we saw this fight 3 years ago where Oliveira knocked out Michael Chandler at lightweight. So everyone knows how good Oliveira's on the ground game is and how he can submit people. But Oliveira knocked out Chandler. Like, it has to be said that Oliveira knocked out Michael Chandler. It's not as though he can't hurt him on the feet. So to me, this fight becomes more about what can Michael Chandler do to change things up, because he did have some moments of success in the first round against Oliveira, and then Oliveira clipped him in the second round. But problem is that Chandler is so wide open and reckless when he dives in to try to go after guys that I think he's just going to go after Oliveira again. And to me, I just love this fight to finish in the first round. Truth be told, unless Michael Chandler decides he's going to fight a strategic fight, I think he's just going to try to empty the clip in round one and the fight's over. So to me, I think this is live where you're going to see bets on both sides where Chandler to win in round one by TKO is plus 850. Oliveira to win in round one is plus 400 by TKO, and it's plus 275 in round one. That tells you quite a bit, because Oliveira is a minus 255 favorite. Chandler's plus 215. But the live the odds for this fight to finish in the first round are not that high. Usually you get wilder swings in terms of somebody's bets, but it's almost as if folks are kind of expecting this fight to end in round one. No one's expecting this fight to go to distance. Going to distance in this fight is plus 550. So to me, this is kind of coming down to, does this end in round one or ends in round two? It's a five-round fight, but realistically, no one expects this to go that far. And with the way these guys fight, I don't think either one of these guys wants to see round three. So to me, this kind of comes down to, what do we get out of Chandler to change up his game plan? Because I think Oliveira knows he can hurt him on the feet and can sub him on the ground. Chandler knows this fight cannot get to the ground. So how desperate does Michael Chandler get to stay on the feet and blitz Oliveira and hope for a quick KO? Like that, to me, that this fight is going to be decided in the first 3 minutes, because I cannot see where, the longer this fight drags on, where Chandler's effectiveness punching improves. I think he has to hurt Charles early, get inside, and be able to just keep pounding him. And to me, his best opportunity to do that is in the first 5 minutes. So if he can hurt Oliveira in that first 3 minutes and then swarm him the remainder of the round and make sure he can't see round two, I think that's his best opportunity. Trying to wait him out and poke and prod, it's like Chandler might have been able to do that 5 years ago. That's not where Michael Chandler is today. He does not have the same gas tank he used to have when he was fighting in Bellator. So to me, this is a clear case where you got a guy with only one style of fighting in Chandler. He's got to figure out a way to beat a guy who's three-dimensional in terms of overall ring awareness and skill set on the ground in Oliveira. Chandler was a good wrestler at one point, but Chandler abandoned that over 6 years ago. Like, Chandler has not shot for takedowns effectively in the better part of a decade. And I've been watching Michael Chandler for many, many years now. He just doesn't use his wrestling anymore. Maybe he remembers that he can wrestle, but I've long since given up the idea that Michael Chandler is going to fight an intelligent fight. At this point, he just operates as a barroom brawler in the octagon. So in that scenario, this is a terrible matchup for Michael Chandler, in my opinion. So my play is you bet on Charles Oliveira to win inside the distance, and you do the double chance with TKO or submission and take the minus 250 in that regard, because that's where he's going to win. To me, that's just the play. I don't see a decision win coming out of Charles Oliveira. I don't see this fight lasting long enough to get to a decision. So to me, I think you just take the minus 250 Oliveira and go from there. To me, there's no reason to get cute with this. I don't see how this fight goes over two rounds. That's why the line is set at over 1.5. Maybe it ends before the end of the second round, but I can't see either one of these guys wanting to get to a third round. So to me, I'm taking the Oliveira side of the equation, and we kind of go from there. Moving on with some of the other fights on this card that I also want to get to. All right, next up, we have a three-round fight in the middleweight division with the All-American Bo Nickel against Paul Bear Jew Craig. And if you know anything about Paul Craig fights, outside of the ridiculous nickname, Paul Craig will just go for submissions and nothing else. He doesn't have a stand-up game. He doesn't really do a ton of wrestling. He does it more with trips and pulling guard and getting guys to the ground. But Bo Nickel is a wrestler. He's going to try to throw bombs, get you to the ground, and just keep throwing bombs in his head. So, like, realistically, what we've been waiting for is for Bo Nickel to get a matchup with the UFC with a veteran that can strike and have some takedown defense and otherwise stymie Bo Nickel and try to see if this kid is a true prospect or not. They're trying to strap a rocket ship to the guy, but they don't give him any matchups where he actually has to test himself. So he just keeps walking through what essentially are tomato cans because they don't challenge the areas where he may have deficiency. So, complete mismatch in favor of Bo Nickel. He's a minus 1,500 favorite for a reason. I think it's a little wide, but it's not crazy for Bo Nickel to win this fight and win this convincingly. So, to me, I think it's Bo Nickel inside the distance, which is only going to get you about minus 1,200 otherwise in terms of the odds. So, to me, it's just not a great betting spot. It's just one of those where I don't think Paul Craig hangs up with the pressure that Bo Nickel's going to push on him. It's just that this is kind of another waste of a matchup because you're using Bo Nickel and MSG, and you're not testing the guy. Now, maybe they just want a fight to hype up the crowd with a big knockout and whatnot, and maybe that's why this matchup was made. But realistically, in terms of his development, this matchup is kind of a waste, in my opinion. Now, maybe Paul Craig comes up with something to shock the world, but I just don't see a scenario where his hand fighting has improved enough where he could stand in there against Bo Nickel and win an exchange of flurry. So to me, this speaks more to where Bo Nickel is in terms of his development and how the UFC is trying to protect him as much as humanly possible. Because I don't think you're going to get much revealed about him tonight because Paul Craig just isn't the matchup that's, maybe Paul Craig lands a good shot on him and stuns him and, puts him in trouble. But I just don't see where Paul Craig does much of anything unless it's a case where, Bo Nickel lets his guard down. Maybe they're in a clinch situation and Paul Craig is able to get a trip. But it's like, it's such low probability of odds of Paul Craig getting this fight in the position where he can use submission skills to get Bo Nickel out of there. But, I'm just not seeing the bully until he starts I would say, like, long story short, because I think I'm belaboring the point, it's like, I don't see anyone testing Bo Nickel's gas tank that fights like Paul Craig. That's the reality situation. Like, until the UFC puts Bo Nickel against either an elite takedown defense specialist that could stand and bang, or a submission specialist that also has stand-up game, there has to be some type of well-rounded fighter that Bo Nickel could fight. Paul Craig ain't it. So, to me, let's move on, because this one's kind of a waste. I will say there are a couple of dogs on this card that I think are very well in play. One of them being Viviana Arujo versus Karin Silva. Arujo is a plus 240 underdog. I think Arujo, and this is what we're kind of talking about, is Silva essentially only fights hard for the first round and a half. Karin Silva oftentimes has run out of energy in the back half of a fight, so usually she starts slowing down in the second and has had multiple third-round fights where She just looks slow. Now, granted, she's 4-0 in the UFC, but realistically, she's been fighting very weak competition. And she's looked bad in the third round a couple of times in her recent fights. Arujo is 1-3 in their last four. Lost to Natalia Silva, who continues to look to be the next top prospect in the UFC. But she lost to Silva, Amanda Ribas, and Alexa Grasso. Literally the three toughest tests in the top five of the division. So to me, I don't think it's a testament of Arujo not being good. It's just she's not elite. I don't think Karine Silva is either. I think minus 280 is a bit too wide for Silva. I think Arujo, this fight's closer to a 50-50. So I would take the shot on in the value on Arujo being plus 240 because realistically that line should be closer to plus 150 than plus 240. I think it's just way too wide as a stand. So to me, I think you got to look at Arujo in terms of an underdog play here. Other fight that I think you have to consider an underdog play is Chris Weidman versus Eric Anders. You know, Weidman, the former middleweight champion, you know, realistically, like, Weidman's career ended 3 years ago when, you know, in a fight against, now I'm blanking on the fight where literally he literally shattered his leg. And why can't I remember the fight now? It was, it's gonna bug me now that I can't think of off the top of my head, like, what the fight was. It was Uriah Hall. That's what it was. It was Uriah Hall because it was the Usman, Masvidal pay-per-view going back, over 3 years ago. Jeez, time flies. But yeah, Weidman broke his leg. And I mean, there's just no other way of saying it. It's like Weidman broke his leg over a 2 year rehab period. Didn't look good against Brad Tavares in a technical decision. Didn't look good against Bruno Silva in a technical decision. Eric Anders, again, former University of Nebraska football player, but this is about as low level of a fight as Chris Weidman has had in 12 years. Like Weidman's been in the game a long time. He's fought the best of best. He hasn't fought someone this bad in ages. So unless this is a sign that Chris Weidman is well and truly done, Weidman should be able to win this fight. I know he's the underdog, and I know he hasn't looked good, but if Weidman can't win this fight against Eric Anders, and right now it's looking like it's a 50-50, like Weidman's at like minus 105, minus 110, Anders at 110, 150, like, so you're basically paying the vig. But if Weidman can't win this fight, he's got to retire. He has to retire. It's like there's no other way around it. It's like, Eric Anders is about as a gatekeeper can get, like, in terms of not really high, not really low. Like, Anders is 36, lost three of his last five. I mean, just doesn't do a ton. Like, does Weidman just want to collect paychecks? Like, he's made plenty of money in his UFC career. So, to me, I don't think it's about the paycheck. I think it's just about wanting to compete at the highest level. But you got to be able to beat Eric Anders. Like, to me, I wouldn't play either one of these guys for DFS purposes because I think this fight stays on the feet and is relatively boring. But if Chris Weidman can't beat Eric Anders, he's got to retire tonight. Like, it's just there's no other way of saying it. It's like he may just retire in a win, but it's just like, you know, just because he's fighting at home, being a local guy. But to me, I just don't see much out of this fight. But as an underdog play, technically, I would say you can bet the Weidman side and throw it into your parlays because it's the worst guy he's fought in over a decade. There's just no getting around it. Other fights to consider. So we have Eduardo Eduarda Mora versus Veronica Hardy, which is the first fight on the card. Mora is plus 120. I don't understand how she wasn't favored, because to me, in this spot, this kind of comes down to a grappler versus striker, and you have a much better grappler than a striker in Mora versus Hardy. Like, Mora has averaged over 4 takedowns in each of her appearances in the octagon. Hardy, you know, was never a very good striker. Basically, she tries to get some volume in, but she's not a high-volume fighter either. To me, this fight screams Mora's going to get some takedowns, and as an underdog, you know, she's going to score well on DraftKings because of the takedowns. The control time and the takedowns that she's going to get, she's my favorite play on DraftKings at 7,500. Once you roll her into lineups with Weidman, and even though I don't love Weidman, but it's like Arujo, that will at least get you into a good spot. It's like, and even for DraftKings purposes, Weidman's a little bit too expensive. I probably would shift down in salary to Basil Hafez versus Obon Elliott. Even though Hafez is plus 230, I think from a DFS standpoint, that's a better DFS play than Weidman. Even though Weidman's more likely to win, I still think Weidman's fight is just pretty boring overall. So from a DFS standpoint, he may not score. But realistically, I think Bo Nickel and John Jones are going to be so highly owned and scoring that you need to have multiple underdogs on your lineup if you're going to win tonight, in my opinion. Because of the fact that with teams building out rosters where you're going to have the high-priced favorites winning, expected to win, I just think it sets up more of a Stars and Scrubs lineup wherein you're taking at least 2 underdogs to win just to at least balance out the roster of the top-heavy guys, because I just don't think the middle range is going to score enough points of what you're looking for in terms of some of these lineups that you're going to come across. So to me, I would take some of the heavy favorites, I'd take some of the dogs I had mentioned, and build out your lineups from there, because realistically, I think you're going to need a pretty high score over 640 to win tonight. So, to me, you're going to need a couple of underdog wins and the big boys to put up points when they have the opportunity to, because I do feel as though there's going to be a high score to ship the main slate. So, that's going to do it for me in terms of the UFC pay-per-view breakdown. You know, definitely like the card. There's plenty of spots you can target, but those were the fights I kind of wanted to talk about. So I'll leave it there. Enjoy the festivities, folks, and enjoy the fights. And until next time, we have NFL tomorrow, so stick around to listen for that. And have a good weekend. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all major outlets.
Back in 1980, 70% of clothing worn by Americans was made by Americans. Today, it's 2%. And the reason is simple. It's cheaper to make things overseas. But that doesn't change the fact that 2% of textile manufacturers have refused to give up on this country, and those companies deserve to be congratulated. I'm talking about companies like American Giant. American Giant controls every link in their supply chain, and that matters because when you buy from American Giant, you create jobs for people in factory towns all across this country. Look, I get it. Nobody wants a lecture. But if you want to see more companies make more things in this country, you got to support the companies who are already doing that very thing. This holiday, check out the clothing at American-Giant.com. Flannels, hoodies, t-shirts, and jeans made to last a lifetime. Support the 2% who are still making it here at American-Giant.com.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.